Stephanie stalked back and forth in the narrow confines of the box, her arms folded tightly across her chest, while Daniel stood at parade rest, scowling out across the empty arena. People had begun to arrive and were filing slowly into the ranks of tiered seating, but it was early yet. No one who was anyone would dream of arriving this much in advance. Under normal circumstances, the two wolves wouldn't have been there either, but they needed to be alone when the information they were waiting for finally came. In particular, they wanted to be sure they got the news before their father did. Daniel was the youngest wolf, only just out of his teens. He had the hulking frame of his father, but as yet neither the muscle nor the presence to carry it off. He was clumsy as a child, until his father beat it out of him, with the result that even now he kept his movements to a minimum, and saw those through with exaggerated grace and care. The stutter took longer to disappear. His hair was a long mane of shining bronze strands with silver highlights, the latest fashion, but he wore the formal robes his father had insisted on for a public family appearance. They were dark, dull, and severely cut, and didn't suit him at all. Daniel often wished he had the nerve to defy his father as Valentine did, but then Daniel often wished for things he didn't have, which was what kept getting him into trouble. That, and his sister. Stephanie Wolf, the middle child, took after her late mother, being tall and gangling with long hair that always looked ratty no matter what she did with it. Her long frame was full of suppressed energy, constantly in danger of bursting out at the most inopportune moments. She was 24 years old, good-looking in a bland sort of way, no matter what she did with cosmetics, and boyishly slim, in an age when voluptuousness was always in fashion. Stephanie had been through a great many body shops in her time, searching for a more acceptable look, but in the end her natural stubbornness kicked in, and she settled for her true face and shape. The aristocracy set trends, not followed them. No one ever commented on her decision or her appearance. Firstly, she was a wolf, and secondly, Daniel was devoted to her, and ever ready to fight a duel over some perceived insult to his sister's beauty. Daniel and Stephanie Wolf, brother and sister, bound together by love and viewpoint and named ambition. Rich, young, and aristocratic. They should have had the world at their feet. But the world wasn't that simple. As younger siblings, they stood to inherit little or nothing as long as Valentine lived. So, being pragmatic and determined and children of their time, not to mention wolves to the core, they schemed and plotted and occasionally arranged little accidents for Valentine. They would have liked to order his death, but they weren't that stupid. In the event of Valentine meeting a violent or suspicious death, the first thing the Imperial Court would do would be to order them both to be examined by an esper. Guilt would mean immediate execution, despite their rank and station. And if they tried and failed, and word got out, they'd be laughingstocks, humiliated before all the families. So they settled for accidents, apparently random occurrences that would hopefully hurt and maim, and at the very least make him look incompetent. If Valentine could be proved unfit to inherit, he might be put aside in favor of Daniel or Stephanie. Of course, if any of these accidents were to be traced back to them, there'd be hell to pay, not least from their father. But if truth be told, the risk was half the fun. After all, there was no point in gambling if you could afford to lose. Daniel and Stephanie needed the thrill almost as much as they needed their brother's downfall. Even if they didn't handle the pressure very well. Stephanie stopped herself pacing back and forth with an effort and threw herself into one of the extremely comfortable chairs set out by the guards earlier, before they retreated to a discreet distance. Apart from making sure they were out of earshot, Daniel and Stephanie ignored them. There were always guards, no matter where they went. It was part of being an aristocrat. Daniel looked back at his sister and smiled slightly.
About time. You've practically worn a groove in that carpet pacing up and down. We wouldn't want dear Papa to get the idea we've anything to feel nervous about, would we?
Stephanie smiled at him sweetly.
Forget the sarcasm, Danny. You've never had the gift for it. It requires wit and a lightness of touch, among other things, all equally beyond your grasp. Father will be here soon, hopefully bearing news of our dear brother's unfortunate mishap. When he tells us, do try not to overreact. We're bound to be suspected, but there's no point in providing our enemies with ammunition. Forget trying to look surprised. Just look dazed and leave all the talking to me.
Of course, Steph, don't I always? There's always the chance Valentine is dead, if things got out of hand.
I don't see how. We planned for every contingency, as long as those thugs followed their instructions. No, if he was dead, we'd have heard by now. Father would have burst in with the news, or the guards, or a servant, or somebody. You couldn't keep news like that quiet.
Keep your voice down, Steph. Of course, you're right. Dear Valentine is currently lying in the filth of a back alley, one big mess of broken bones.
Yes, you're right. You did fix the gun, didn't you?
Of course. All identifying marks were removed. There's no way it can be traced to us.
The gun still worries me. It's a clear sign the street gang wasn't working on its own.
We had to be sure none of the gang would survive to answer questions. The gun and the subliminal conditioning will take care of that.
Stephanie relaxed a little in her chair.
Valentine won't even know what hit him. The medics will fix him up fast enough, but the attack will cast severe doubts on his competence. A few more such incidents and he'll be a laughingstock. And then, finally, we'll find a way to dispose of poor, accident-prone Valentine. And nothing will stand between us and control of Clan Wolf.
Unless Constance has a child.
Ah, yes. Dear stepmother. If she was to have a child, dear Papa might well disinherit us in favor of the newcomer. So it's just as well I bribed our family food taster not to notice the contraceptives I've been lacing her food with. She can no more carry a child now than Father could.
Daniel glared at her.
And what if he gets an attack of the scruples and betrays us?
He won't. He can't betray us now without incriminating himself. He should have gone to Father the moment he suspected anything was wrong. But the money I offered was just too tempting. Besides, we still have some insurance. The drug I've been slipping into his food is extremely addictive. And I'm his only source. He checked everyone's food but his own. Stop worrying, Danny. I've thought of everything.
Daniel looked at her affectionately.
You always did have a delightfully devious mind. We'll have such fun ruling the family.
Stephanie smiled dazzlingly.
With my brain and your brawn, we can do anything, Danny. Anything at all.
And then they both fell silent as they heard approaching footsteps and the guards crashing to attention. Daniel and Stephanie just had time to get to their feet and look casual, and then Jacob Wolf came crashing into the box, followed by their new stepmother. Jacob was clearly in a foul mood. His heavy brows furrowed in a scowl, and his two children had enough sense to bow politely and say nothing. The wolf was flaming mad about something, and they didn't want his anger aimed their way. Daniel bowed to his stepmother. Stephanie barely nodded. Constance Wolf smiled at them both. Constance was 17 years old, and already a breathtaking beauty on a world noted for its beautiful women. Tall and blonde and perfectly proportioned, she seemed to glow with health and good cheer and raw sexuality. Just to look at her was enough to send a man's hormones into overdrive. Jacob had won her for his new wife by the simple expedient of intimidating most of her other suitors and killing the rest in duels. Jacob was a great believer in tradition. Constance seemed happy enough with the arrangement, which made her one of the most important women on Golgotha, and had settled in well to the running of Clan Wolf and her husband. The Wolf's three children had looked on with varying levels of concern as her word became law and her whim became increasingly wide-ranging. Jacob knew what was going on, but said nothing. It was up to his wife and his children to sort out their own pecking order. As long as they were polite in company and didn't squabble in his presence, he didn't give a damn. He spun around suddenly, catching all three by surprise, and fixed them with his glare.
The Summerisle died in court today. Cut down in a duel by Kid Death. His own damn grandson. There's no pride in family anymore.
Daniel smiled tightly.
Youth must have its day, Father. The old must give way to the new. That's the way of things.
The wolf glared at him contemptuously.
You ever raise a hand to me, boy, and I'll cut it off at the wrist. Or perhaps you think you're ready to run this family? Of course not, Father. Not yet.
Not ever, unless you buck your ideas up. But I'll make a man of you yet, boy, despite all your sister can do to prevent it.
That's not fair,
said Stephanie, moving protectively closer to Daniel.
Someone has to look out for him.
He's a wolf. He's supposed to be able to look out for himself. That's what being a man is all about. I won't always be here to wipe his nose for him.
Now stop that,
said Constance, pouting prettily as she dropped a restraining hand on his arm.
You're good for another century at least, and I won't have you saying otherwise. Besides, it's far too nice a day to spoil it with a quarrel. We're supposed to be here for a family meeting before the games begin. Can't we make a start?
Not without Valentine. I seriously doubt he'll have anything serious to contribute, apart from the address of his latest chemist. But he is my eldest and has a right to be present, even if he is late. Again?
Yes,
said Daniel.
I wonder what's keeping him.
Stephanie tensed, but for once Daniel had enough sense not to share a confidential smirk with her. Instead, he was looking thoughtfully at their father, and Stephanie felt like joining him. Jacob Wolfe only retired to his private box at the arena for family meetings when he wanted to discuss something really delicate. The box's combination of indoors and outdoors made it difficult for anyone to bug, and the ESP blocker concealed in the structure of the box kept out any psionic eavesdroppers. Jacob believed in being thorough. Stephanie looked away from her father and searched for something to distract her. Out across the arena, the giant hollow screen was showing close-ups and slow-motion replays of the fighting in the arena. The hollow screen was there for the benefit of the connoisseur, and those right at the back, so that no detail of the blood and butchery need be missed. Stephanie smiled broadly, enjoying the show. And then she stiffened as she heard footsteps approaching the box. Her heart jumped, and she breathed deeply to keep a betraying flush from her cheeks. The messenger was finally here with news of Valentine. She turned slowly, savoring the moment, and found herself face to face with Valentine, coolly entering the private box, as though it was just another day and all was well with the world. For a moment she thought she might faint, but a quick glance at Daniel, all slack-jawed and bulging eyes, brought her back. She had to be cool, had to be ice-cold. She had to be strong for both of them until she could discover just how much trouble they were both in. She made herself bow casually to Valentine, and he nodded politely in return.
"Is something wrong, sister?"
Valentine said courteously.
"You look rather pale."
"No, nothing's wrong. You're a little late. We were concerned something might have happened to you. Did anything unusual happen on your way here?"
said Stephanie, fighting to keep her voice as calm as his.
"Unusual? No, not that I can think. Why do you ask?"
"No reason. No reason."
Valentine smiled his wide crimson smile, and his dark eyes gave away nothing at all. He shrugged off his cloak and dropped it over the back of the nearest chair. Stephanie frowned in spite of herself. Her brother was wearing the ugliest, coarsest, and most unfashionable clothes she'd ever seen him in. In fact, to be bluntly honest, they looked like a tradesman's clothes, and not even the right size. She would have sworn he would rather have died than appear in such a state in public.
"I'm a little late because I had to stop off along the way. I had to pick up my new outfit. Rather dashing, don't you think?"
"We can discuss your appalling taste in clothes later. We have family business to discuss. We waited for you to put in an appearance because some of it specifically affects you."
Valentine sank elegantly into a chair and fixed his father with a condescending gaze.
"You're not thinking about putting me through detox again, Father, surely? You must know by now that my system will never be normal again after all the wonderful things I've done to it. You'd have better luck trying to change my height than my blood chemistry."
"No,"
said the wolf, smiling unpleasantly.
"I've given up trying to change you, Valentine. I thought I'd let someone else have a try. I've decided it's time you got married. All of you."
He beamed round at his three children, who looked back with varying degrees of shock. The wolf's smile deepened.
To that end, I have arranged marriages for you all to suitable young matches of good family backgrounds.
There was a long pause while nobody said anything. Jacob was enjoying himself. Valentine was looking thoughtful, and Stephanie and Daniel were looking desperately at each other for ideas and support. The wolf sat down in his usual chair, taking his time to make himself comfortable. Constance came and sat beside him, still smiling sweetly. Jacob patted her fondly on the arm.
Your new mother and I have been discussing this. It's time I had a few grandchildren to bounce on my knee, young sprouts to carry on the bloodline. I waited till late in life to sire you three, and I won't have you making the same mistake. You're getting married, whether you like it or not.
Do I understand you have already picked up partners for us?
Damn right I have. Leave you to sort it out and you'd make a right mess of it. I've chosen prime young fillies for you and Daniel, and a strapping young blade for you, Steph. Good bloodlines, excellent stock. You'll meet them at the Imperial Ball tonight, and be married next month.
Next month?
Howled Daniel. Stephanie didn't think she'd ever seen his eyes bulge quite so much, but for once she was helpless to support him. She was too busy trying to get her own whirling thoughts under control.
Yes, next month.
Jacob wasn't even trying to hide his satisfaction.
If I gave you three any more time, you'd undoubtedly find a way to wriggle out of it. So the marriages will go ahead just as soon as the proprieties have been observed.
I'll see you damned in hell first, Daddy!
Stephanie wouldn't have believed her own voice could hold such ice, such venom. Daniel nodded vigorously at her side.
You can argue all you like. It won't do you any good. You could, of course, refuse to go through with the ceremony, in which case I would have no option but to disinherit you and have you thrown out of the clan. Think about that for a moment, dear children. Could you exist outside the protection of family? No money, no station, no future. Having to work for a living? What jobs could you do? No, you've been cosseted and pampered too long to survive in the real world. Any last comments before we pass on to our next order of business?
He looked from one face to another, one eyebrow raised politely. Daniel was trying to find his voice while looking like someone had just kicked him in the gut. Stephanie was scowling furiously, thinking hard. Valentine smiled suddenly.
If it's to be a church wedding, can I wear a veil? I look good in white.
Jacob gave him a hard look, but decided not to rise to the bait. He looked out over the arena, but nothing much was happening. The first few fighters had mostly killed each other, but there was hardly anyone in the stands or private boxes to see it. The last two survivors stamped back and forth across the bloodied sands, but few of the slowly growing audience took any notice. The winner lowered his sword and put it away, then bent down and helped his fellow gladiator to his feet. No one had cared enough to turn a thumb down. The fighters moved slowly away, heading back to the main gates and the training areas under the arena. Jacob watched them go. He thought he knew how they felt. He was fighting for his life and that of his family in the great game of intrigue. And no one seemed to give a damn about his struggle either. He turned back to face his children and tried to keep the tiredness out of his face.
The contract for mass production of the new star drive is being readied. Whoever wins the rights to this new drive will end up with power and riches almost beyond imagination. It is therefore vitally important that Clan Wolf wins the contract, or at the very least ensures that our principal enemies do not. Were Clan Campbell to beat us out, for example, it would ruin our shipping interests overnight and leave us vulnerable to all kinds of hostile takeovers. The very existence of the family could be at risk.
I hate to be picky, but the Campbells do have much more experience at the Star Drive field than we do. They would do a much better job.
What does that have to do with anything?
Valentine shrugged.
I just thought it might not be in the Empire's best interest for us to steal the contract away from the Campbells.
The sooner I get you married and raising children, the better. The family comes first, always. Besides, what's good for Clan Wolf is good for the Empire. Now pay attention. Clan Campbell, bad cess to them all, have been proving unexpectedly successful of late in many fields. I'm pretty sure they've got a silent partner hiding in the background. Someone high up, financially independent, and politically invisible. According to my sources, who for the amount of money I'm paying them had better be reliable, this silent partner has been providing the Campbells with all kinds of new high-tech, practical and theory, that the Campbell labs couldn't have produced on their own. I thought at first it might be one of the minor clans trying to buy their way into the big time while hiding their light under a larger family's protective bushel, but I regret to report that none of my sources have been able to come up with anything incriminating. Whoever's backing the Campbells has gone to great pains to hide their trail very thoroughly.
Could it be one of the undergrounds?
Said Stephanie, frowning.
The cyber rats, for instance.
That's more like it. You see, you have got brains when you care to use them. My people are currently investigating the various extra-legal organizations to see if any of them have been getting ideas above their station. But it's going to be some time before they'll be able to report back anything worth listening to.
Maybe they've managed some kind of contact with the new aliens,
said Daniel, not wanting to be left out. The wolf looked at him.
I suppose that's a thought. The Campbells wouldn't hesitate to blow away the rest of the Empire if they thought there was a good chance they'd come out on top. I'll put a few agents on it. Well, Valentine, have you nothing to contribute?
Valentine Wolf produced his small silver pillbox, opened it, and took out a large pinch of fluorescent blue powder. He placed it carefully in two small heaps on the back of his hand, and then sniffed it up with great style and elan, one heap for each nostril. His eyes widened, showing bright and gleaming against his mascara, and for a moment his crimson smile seemed impossibly wide. He shuddered once, put away the pillbox, and smiled at his father.
Since we cannot hope to beat the Campbells on the grounds of business experience or technical expertise, we will have to do battle with them on the social and political field, set up a few schemes to disrupt, discredit, and if need be, destroy Clan Campbell, or any other family that stands between us and the contracts we seek. I would like to offer my help, but of course, if I am to be married at such short notice, I really don't think that I can afford to become personally involved. I have far too much on my mind.
Right. Same here.
Then I'll just have to soldier on without your no doubt valuable input. You're getting married if I have to see you all dragged in chains to the altar. But that's enough business for the moment. We've covered everything urgent. Your new mother is a great fan of the games, and I promised her an uninterrupted afternoon's pleasure of death and mayhem.
But what...
Enjoy the games, dammit. This box is costing me enough.
The games proper started traditionally with rebel baiting. 20 convicted felons, habitual offenders who hadn't learned a thing from their previous days in jail, were turned out onto the sands without armor or weapons, and 20 experienced gladiators pursued them with whips and swords. The rebels ran in every direction, screaming for help or a weapon or just another chance, and the crowd booed and hissed them. The gladiators pursued their prey, cool and calm and very professional. And finally, one by one, they died for the pleasure of the crowd, and their bodies were dragged away. The growing crowd laughed and cheered and applauded the gladiators. They always enjoyed a good comedy turn. The stalls were filling up now, and most of the private boxes. The beginners and warm-ups had done their job, and the real games were about to begin. The holocameras were in place, ready to catch all the action as it happened, and already the resident bookies were making money hand over fist. The first real turn was a pulse stirrer. 3 clones from the underground were turned loose in the arena, armed only with swords. They were all the same slim, dark-haired youth, with wide eyes and trembling mouths. Probably teachers or technicians or civil servants before they made the mistake of trying to find their freedom through the clone underground. They had never drawn a sword in anger in their life, and now it was all that stood between them and a particularly unpleasant death. They made their way uncertainly to the center of the arena, back to back in a triangle, moving with the almost telepathically linked precision that only clones can achieve. They all had the same instincts and mannerisms and held their sword in the same way. When they fought, they would fight as one. for all the good it would do them. The crowd booed them lustily, and then cheered as trumpets sounded and their champion appeared from the main gate. All the wolves broke off from their various thoughts and stared hard at the newcomer. The Campbells had loaned out their private investigator, the man called Razor. He was tall and blocky, with thick slabs of muscle and a patient, brooding face. His skin was dark, his close-cropped hair was white, and his eyes were a curious green. He moved with a slow, steady power that suggested something implacable and unstoppable. He carried a curved sword in each hand, but wore no armor. He didn't need any. He was an investigator. Technically, he was supposed to give up the title once he'd retired from the service, but no one was stupid enough to tell him that to his face. Clans often acquired their own investigators, once they were free of the service's demands. They made invaluable bodyguards and champions, mainly on the grounds that very few people were dumb enough to upset an investigator. Razor moved unhurriedly toward the clones, and they scattered around him like fluttering birds. One moment Razor was still, and the next he was moving too fast to follow. His swords lashed out, burying themselves in flesh and leaping out again, and the three clones staggered away from him, clutching at their death wounds, to lie still and broken on the bloody sands. Razor sheathed his swords and bowed formally to the Campbells' private box. He didn't wait to be acknowledged before turning and walking back to the main gates. The crowd was booing. It had been over too quickly. They hadn't had a chance to savor the suffering and deaths of the clones. A few connoisseurs and military men who understood what they'd just seen were applauding loudly, but no one paid them any attention. Least of all, Razor. Microorganisms in the sand ate up the fallen blood and dispersed it evenly as the handlers raked the sands till they were tidy again. They finished their work and got off the sands as quickly as they could. The crowd tended to throw things, and some of them had a nasty sense of humor. The recorded trumpet sounded. A man strode out onto the sands, and the crowd went insane, jumping to their feet to cheer and wave and hug each other in anticipation. There was no announcement. Everyone knew who he was. He was the Masked Gladiator, undefeated champion of the games, the darling of the Golgotha crowds. Everything else had been warm-ups. He was what they had all come to see. No one knew who he really was. He could have been any age, from any background. He was tall and lively muscular, wore a simple anonymous steel mesh tunic, and carried a sword that was almost as famous as he was. It was long and slender, and entirely unaugmented. It was called Morgana. No one knew why. A featureless black steel helm covered his head completely, and he had never been seen without it. In his 3-year career as a gladiator, he had never even come close to being beaten or unmasked. He specialized in winning against impossible odds, and the crowd loved him for it. His identity and his reasons for concealing it remained a mystery, though there were any number of rumors. Some said he'd been dishonorably discharged from the army and sought to regain his honor through combat. Others said he was an investigator who had somehow lost his nerve and sought to reforge it in the arena. There were those who spoke of a lost or dead love and said he sought the comfort of forgetfulness or death in battle. And some at least suggested he was a noble. Seeking thrills and excitement, he couldn't find anywhere else.